huge week in the RHI inquiry came to an end yesterday. It was a week that saw many revelations. On Monday, Arlene Foster admitted she had never read the legislation on RHI, despite standing up in Stormont and recommending it to all of you, the public of Northern Ireland. Tuesday, heard how Mrs. Foster was asked to sign a document containing the following words regarding RHI. I have read the regulatory impact assessment and I am satisfied that the benefit justify the costs. Despite not knowing the costs, she signed that document anyway. On Wednesday, Arlene Foster's former special advisor, Andrew Crawford, publicly apologised for sending a confidential government document about the RHI scheme to a relative. And then yesterday, let's move to there, when inquiry chair Sir Patrick Coughlan suggested that RHI whistleblower Jeanette O'Hagan might have been, quote, fed to the wolves. That was because an email was released which led to her identification. Arlene Foster accepted that the businesswoman who had raised concerns with her over RHI was caught in the political crossfire as the fury over the scheme erupted.
This was a storm that was going on at the time, and there was a lot of firefighting going on to try and deal with the allegations that were being made around the RHI scheme. And that is where this all comes from. People had made allegations. Deputy Leader was trying to deal with those allegations, wrongly as it turned out, and that's where we have ended up.
Would you agree that Mrs. O'Hagan, in the midst of that, was caught in the political crossfire?
Yes, absolutely.
Do you think that the Department of the Economy did enough to safeguard her interests at that time?
Well, I was not in the centre of that. I was dealing with other issues at the time. I understand there was some conversations between departmental officials and Ms O'Hagan. They clearly were not properly understood, and therefore that led to the email being released in the fashion that it was, and Ms O'Hagan clearly was unhappy about that. We had been told that she had been contacted, that she was content for the email to go out. That was our understanding. Clearly that's not what the case was. And again, in the melee that was happening at the time, it's easy to see why those sorts of misunderstandings could occur, but it's not acceptable. Certainly as party leader, I am sorry that Ms O'Hagan got caught up in the middle of all of this.
I'd asked you a question as to whether you thought the department had done enough to safeguard her interests around this time. And tell me if this is wrong, but I understand your answer to that essentially to amount to no, they didn't, because of this lack of clarity around what her position
yes,
was.
Yes, I think there was a lack of clarity. I think that is the correct way to put it.
Do you think that your party did enough to safeguard her interests at this time?
Well, you have to understand that, and I think you do understand, the circumstances at that time, and we were trying to get answers to allegations that were being fired to us, not just daily, but sometimes hourly, by media outlets, and they were trying to find answers to that. They had asked the department around this email. The answers they got back were they felt enough to allow them to put out the statement, and it turns out that's not the case. And of course, I regret that that's the case.
There's a pretty basic conflict, isn't there? Ms O'Hagan is adamant she did not give permission for the email to come out.
Yes, and our understanding was that she was content, so there's a complete breakdown in that.
You used the word understanding. The email was released, despite her being adamant it should not be. We really need to know how that understanding came to be formed.
Well, I'm sorry I can't help you with that, Chair, because I wasn't in the middle of this discussion. I was elsewhere at the time trying to deal with others.
There were several different possibilities, one of which was she was fed to the wolves.
Well, the newsletter's political editor, Sam McBride, with us to talk us through this again. My goodness, Sir Patrick Coughlan, he rarely hits and misses the wall. Fed to the wolves, Sam.
Yes, and Arlene Foster, from memory, didn't say anything in response to that. I suppose that it wasn't a direct question. It was more in thinking out loud, I suppose, about what was going on here. I was struck in that exchange by how Mrs. Foster, I suppose, distanced herself from this episode. This was at the really at the height of this, in the middle of December 2016. It was, I think, about 12, 13 days, something like that, after the BBC Spotlight programme, which had really kicked this all off. And there was huge scrutiny on her, huge scrutiny on the party. And Nigel Dodds put out this statement, which was accompanied by the DUP press office putting out this email from the whistleblower, which really wasn't a whistleblowing email. And they were saying this is the only email contact she ever had. And really, you should be retracting your claims about this. And it was really addressed to the media, to the opposition parties. But from what we heard from our...
I remember, sorry to interrupt, Sam. I just keep my memory accurate here. But I have memories of Nigel Dodds doing many media interviews saying, you see, here's the email. I'm paraphrasing, here's the email. It does not talk about misuse of the scheme. Am I wrong?
That was essentially the tenor of what he was saying. Now, to be fair to him, and to be fair to the DUP, I suppose, on this point, Arlene Foster was very clear yesterday that she did not know at this point that any of these other emails existed because she had deleted them. They were in her personal account.
But the point is, they did exist, and they were wrong.
Exactly, and that's what the chairman was trying to get to there. How on earth could you have a situation that there was this political back and forth going on between the DUP and opposition parties, and a whistleblower ends up being unmasked unwittingly in the middle of this? I mean, how does this look to somebody who might think about blowing the whistle on something else? What do they think are the circumstances in which their correspondence will be treated in the future? So it goes way beyond this again. It goes into the whole area of how serious is Stormont, or was Stormont when it existed, about taking what people were saying when they came forward with information about abuse, etc., about schemes?
But
was it about just protecting themselves, or were they actually getting into the nitty-gritty of what they were alleging?
But there is an obvious implication, which is why it is so extraordinary. There's an obvious implication from the choice of words that Sir Patrick Coughlan used when he talked about the possibility that a member of the public had been, quote, fed to the wolves. That means deliberate. That means a proactive, premeditated decision to do something, fed to the wolves. Does it
not? I think so. I think the question, though, and we will get a lot more evidence about this in the next phase of the inquiry, this was almost taken out of sequence to a certain extent yesterday. There are a lot of other people who are involved in this. So we have Andrew McCormick, who was the permanent secretary of Mrs. Foster's old department at that point. He was involved in this, and there was an official in his department who had spoken to the whistleblower. There were several DUP spads and press officers and different people. What struck me yesterday was that Arlene Foster was saying all of this was going on. It was so important to the party, but she wasn't personally really that involved in it. It was Nigel Dodds, it was the spads, it was the press office. That was what really struck me yesterday about her evidence.
And by the way, for any of those who were involved in the releasing of that email, they would very much, no doubt, deny that they fed any member of the public to the wolves. The inquiry chair, Sir Patrick Coughlan, if we move on, Sam, was incredulous that Arlene Foster and her then Enterprise Department did not get warnings about RHI from DARD, the Agriculture Department at Stormont. Let's hear what Sir Patrick said. He starts by making reference to the whistleblower again, Jeanette O'Hagan.
Why on earth were you not getting similar messages from the Department of Agriculture? She had been to these events, she had seen the material, and yet nobody comes to you from a fellow department. Why was there no interdepartment cooperation on this?
Well, I can't answer that, Chair. The reality
is
it didn't happen.
Inexplicable.
Well, they were running these events. I presume that they were talking to officials about it, but certainly there was nothing at my level in relation to the Department of Agriculture.
But all of this had to depend on one individual. It would have been completely obvious to the officials. I don't know how high it would have gone up, but I presume the officials would have told their permanent secretary and eventually the minister. But there was no cooperation from a fellow department in this devolved government.
Well, I think there was cooperation at official level because, as I understand it, Mr. Hutchison was engaging with the Department of Agriculture, but certainly it wasn't something that came across between the two ministers, if that's the point you're making.
That is one of the points I'm making. If you say there was cooperation with Mr. Hutchison, are you suggesting that officials from DARD came to him and said, look, this is being exploited. People are getting a payback in 2 years. You need tiering.
I have no idea whether that conversation took place, Chair, and I can't say that. There's doesn't matter.
Well,
all I know is that there was, as I understand it, Mr. Hutchison was at some of those stakeholder events that DARD had organised.
Yes, he was. Yeah. And he has told us that he didn't see any of this material, burn to earn, cash for ash. So I think it's pretty unlikely that the Department of Agriculture officials were coming to him and complaining, or drawing to his attention, that public money was going up in smoke. And there's no answer really to that, is there?
Well, I don't have any answer as to why they didn't do that, no.
Well, Sir Patrick went back to the issue again. That was after it was put to Arlene Foster by the inquiry barrister, David Schofield, that some members of the public would find it hard to believe that a politician would not have heard about a scheme which was too good to be true. Let's hear how Arlene Foster replied.
Well, I can assure you, Mr. Schofield, that I certainly didn't pick up anything of that nature, because if I had, I would have raised it not only with my special advisor but with my officials as well. Why in heaven's name would I want to be associated with a scheme that was overcompensating and doing what we now know it was doing? It's not something that I would want to have been associated with, I can assure you. I have a record in government of trying to deliver, that's absolutely true, but not to do so in a way that the scheme worked out. And of course, the scheme, a huge regret for me in my political life.
Well, farming, as you know, is a difficult business.
It is.
It's not well paid. It involves a lot of work. It's dependent on the weather. It may be that people who were actually directly involved in installing biomass boilers or having them installed would have been perhaps slow to come and say this scheme is a wonderful scheme. I'm going to get paid off in 2 years here. That, in my view, doesn't explain why a fellow department and their officials weren't coming to you and saying, do you really want to do this? Or are you aware this is what your scheme is doing? I can understand a certain reluctance on the part of farmers in the far-flung parts of Northern Ireland, or indeed any non-far-flung parts, who will say, thank goodness for this. But
well, I take your point, Chair, that they, I have to say, of course, the scheme benefited not just farmers, it benefited other organisations as well. And if the scheme was doing what we later found out it was doing for them, why in heaven's name would they alert me to the fact that they were gaining extra than should have been? I mean, that's not something that you would tell someone who might then do something about it. I take your point in relation to DARD, Chair. I mean, this was public money. If they were aware that it was, as we were then, the phrase became common parlance, cash for ash. If that was the case, that was known to the Department of Agriculture, they should have told the department that was running the scheme.
But of course, Sam McBride, Arlene didn't know herself. but as Sir Patrick is summing up there, here you have these departments and politicians and people who are in touch with the industry, they're communicating with them. And Sir Patrick's saying, really? Nobody, like they don't live on another planet. Nobody in government heard about this happening?
That's right. And one of the issues which has come up time and time again is the lack of communication between the Department of Agriculture and the Department of Enterprise, which was Mrs. Foster's department. The chairman said at one point yesterday that actually it's hard to see how devolution works properly in those circumstances. And that was where these two departments seemingly were not communicating. We've heard evidence before where actually while then Jonathan Bell's department, as it was trying to close the scheme desperately, the Agriculture Department under Michelle O'Neill was still promoting the scheme, still going out and telling farmers to install it. So there's a complete breakdown within government. I suppose during the period of devolved government, some people looked in and wondered, does it matter that the ministers are warring publicly, that they're not pulling in the same direction? I think one of the questions coming out of the inquiry here is whether that actually had an impact in terms of how their departments communicated, or whether this was a failure of officials, or whether it was both, that both ministers and officials in these departments were almost dealing in fiefdoms, and they were loath to get in touch, to pick up the phone to the other department to say, well, hang on a minute, what are you doing about this?
I remember during all that, we were covering our child nearly on a daily basis, Sam, back in December 2016, and from there on, much to the annoyance of some politicians, but we did it. I remember at the time that the public were asking questions as to, look, what's also the responsibility of members of the public here who know that they're getting too much, who know that this wasn't the principle of the scheme, and they're taking the money and they're keeping it. Now, with that context, if we remember back to then, I was interested to hear Sir Patrick say, well, he understands why some farmers might have kept it. And Arlene Foster following that up by saying, well, you know, she wouldn't have expected anybody who was gaining extra to go and tell them. Those are controversial remarks to make.
Potentially. I think there are two categories of people here. There are people who have put in these boilers, who have a good use for the heat, who are not running them round the clock, but are having basically free heat and maybe getting a little bit of money on the top of that. And they think genuinely that this is how the government has set it up. They want it to be generous, to encourage us to get into this scheme. Then you've got other people who have seen through the whole thing, who are installing boilers allegedly in empty sheds, who are running them round the clock, who are feeding wood chip into one boiler, which has been dried by another boiler, all of that sort of thing. And I think there are two different categories there. And the moral question is more, I think, for the latter category rather than perhaps for the former. But I mean, that's going to be an individual judgment which people will make.
Earlier this week, just finally, the inquiry heard how the former DUP spat, this is Andrew Crawford again, he had sent confidential RHI documents to a relative, still works for the DUP. The inquiry barrister David Schofield asked Arlene Foster if that might lead members of the public to conclude that Mrs. Foster and the DUP were not taking the issue seriously.
He's not working for me directly. He is conducting some research in terms of Brexit for our member of the European Parliament. It's very much a backroom role. He's using his expertise in relation to that. And it's not a full-time job by any means. I think that given everything that happened in late 2016, early 2017, and I hear very clearly what you're asking me around the emails, and that was inappropriate. It was disappointing from my point of view. But I don't think that should bar a person from having part-time research employment forever and a day. And I'm quite sure that he has learned his lesson in relation to that because of the way in which things transpired in January, February of 2016. And he has been the subject for a man who never sought the media spotlight. He has been greatly thrown into the media spotlight and has suffered as a result of that.
Well, that's hardly surprising, is it, given what happened?
Well, I think the scale, Chair, of what happened to him was difficult to take in at the time.
I think anybody can have a debate about that, but it is hardly surprising, given what happened, that the media took an interest in it.
Oh, not at all. And, of course, that is to be expected. What one doesn't expect is some of the more outrageous commentary around it.
Wonder who she's talking about there, Sam.
Well, she didn't specify what that was. I mean, I think most of what has been written about Andrew Crawford has been fact-based, I suppose. I mean, it's the subject of a live inquiry, so there's a limit to what any of us can say in terms of commenting on it. I think it's clear from what Arlene Foster is saying there that she seems to think that in some way and for some reason Andrew Crawford has been treated somewhat unfairly by the media, that there has been too much scrutiny on his role. I think from what Sir Patrick Cochrane is saying there, He's finding that it would seem difficult to reconcile with what has been said by Dr. Crawford, that he acted in a way that was improper.
Okay, Sam, thank you very much. We would encourage you to go to the RHI inquiry and watch it as it unfolds. If you want to catch up and stuff, we would encourage you not just to take the individual testimony of any day, but to try to look at this in the round of everything that is being published, and you can get a full summary of what has happened so far in the RHI inquiry on our BBC News website.